When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
The T-Biz Podcast delivers tea news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
The T-Biz Podcast and blog connect you directly to experts in the tea lands. Listen as their voices reveal the news, innovations, cultural insights, and consumer trends that most impact the industry. Paired with Tea Journey, a digital magazine for tea enthusiasts, the Tea Biz Portal is a global resource for everyone who loves tea. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. China launches a global tea marketing initiative. Kenya suspends auction price minimums on old tea. And AI models local weather on a planetary scale. Plus, the Northwest Tea Festival nears. Tea festivals are enjoying a resurgence, basking in the renewed enthusiasm of health-conscious consumers and the joy of imbibing quality tea. The 14th annual Northwest Tea Festival draws tea enthusiasts to Seattle for two educational and fun-filled days at the Seattle Convention Center on September 28th and 29th. The Northwest Tea Fest has a rich history in tea, evolving from a small local event to become the foremost social gathering for tea lovers in a region known for its beverages. Joining us today are founders Julie Rosenoff and Doug Livingston. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia tea estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
China has embarked on an ambitious global tea marketing initiative and chartered a new foundation to share its tea culture and tea research and to enhance China's tea brand's brand value. Last Friday, the Center for International Cultural Communication and the China International Communications Groups, the ICG, hosted 300 tea professionals representing the government, universities, cultural and agricultural organizations, and tea corporations. Tea for Harmonious World was the theme of the elaborate launch ceremony. CICG's slogan is preserving and promoting tea culture, sharing and learning for global good. Panel discussions followed the launch ceremony. The program's objectives included organizing cultural exchanges between China and other countries, supporting international outreach, and promoting select native tea brands. CICG President Du Shanyuan praised tea, quote, as a medium to implement the Global Civilization Initiative, advance China's tea and tea culture on the global stage, and promote cultural exchange and mutual learning, end quote. CICG's Yang Yiping reports, quote, it is believed that this event will provide an important opportunity and platform to further consolidate international consensus, strengthening multilateral communication, and promote a healthy, stable, and sustainable development of the tea industry, end quote. During the event, Forbes China announced its 2024 selection of 23 extraordinary teas in four categories. In addition, 15 companies were named Tea Enterprises of the Year. Business Insight. A rhythmic ebb and flow describes China's four centuries of trading tea with the West. 80 years ago, in 1949, tea exports declined to a trickle as the tide of tea receded. 30 years passed before the tide turned in 1979. Exports have been flowing strongly since the mid-aughts. China's latest educational and cultural-focused marketing mirrors Japanese tea outreach, which has resulted in record exports in the past 5 years. Kenya has suspended a fixed minimum price for Kenya Tea Development Agency teas that remain unsold after 6 months. The suspension allows a reported 70 million kilos of aging tea to be quickly dispatched. Quote, the objective is to allow teas to meet the market, to move the teas even at salvage value, end quote, writes George Okoth, Managing Director of East Africa Tea Trade Association, EATTA. The EATTA-run auction is the largest black tea exchange in the world, accounting for 32% of exports by volume. Cabinet Secretary for Agriculture and Livestock Andrew Karanja, who announced the suspension of minimum prices, said a committee would be formed to investigate the problems associated with the reserve price and the quality of tea sold at auction. Karanja said KTDA had sold 30 million kilos of tea processed within its three-year shelf life. He did not say who bought the tea or how much they paid. Tea cataloged for auction that remains unsold can be resubmitted for bidding. Failing a second try, the teas are reclassified and referred to as reprints. Until the suspension, the tea remains subject to a pricing policy dating to 2022. The result is that large quantities of unsold tea are overflowing warehouses, depressing prices, increasing storage costs, and creating a scarcity of space for newly arrived tea. In 2023, EATTA reported buyers purchased only 40.7% of the 770 million kilos on offer. In mid-August, Mombasa recorded the lowest average price per kilo in 3 years. In sale 34 this week, 91.7% of the reprint tea in the Mombasa catalog remain unsold. Alfred Njaji, former managing director of KTDA's management services, writes, quote, the absorption levels for reprints are still pathetically low. For sale 33, it was 14, and 8.3% for sale 34 after suspension of the minimum price. So I don't know what magic will be used to clear the 100 million kilos of old stock in a month. Brokers don't buy teas, end quote. It is my considered opinion that the minimum price requirement is still in force and that buyers will neglect any fresh teas they consider not worth the price and come back after 6 months to buy them for a song, he said. Average auction prices have increased recently from late July's average of $2.09 per kilo. Quote, this might help a bit, end quote, he said, explaining that the Mombasa auction remains the primary avenue for selling tea, but factories have also been using direct selling overseas DSO outlets since the clause in the 2020 Tea Act forbidding the practice had been suspended by the courts. Quote, they realized they were missing a great market outlet, so amending the law will be facilitative, end quote, said Njaji. Njaji writes, quote, I don't see any increase in demand that dramatically absorbs the excess supply, because the demand growth cannot happen overnight. I see the industry learning lessons from excess supply. Basically, low prices can't sustain the business. Already it's happening. Some tea factories have closed down in Tanzania and Uganda. I see many more following suit, especially with a forecast by FAO of prices dipping, he said. The fusion of AI, artificial intelligence, physics simulations, and real-time observed data are making it possible for meteorologists to help avert tragedies like the one that befell tea workers in South India in July, when summer monsoons triggered landslides that killed hundreds and displaced thousands. Climate change and the extreme weather events it spawns are projected to cost 1 million lives and $1.7 trillion annually by 2050. This week, NVIDIA Research announced a new generative AI model called Stormcast for emulating high-fidelity atmospheric dynamics. The model enables reliable weather prediction at the mesoscale, a scale larger than storms but smaller than cyclones, critical for disaster planning and mitigation. This model is powered by NVIDIA Earth 2, a digital twin cloud platform that enables simulation and visualization of weather and climate predictions at a global scale with unprecedented accuracy and speed and unprecedented resolution. Tea growers in Taiwan, for example, can now rely on the National Science and Technology Center for Disaster Reduction to super-resolve 25-kilometer-scale atmospheric data by 12.5 times down to 2 kilometers, 1,000 times faster and using 3,000 times less energy for a single inference than traditional methods. Corrector diffusion, CORDIF, models allow the center's potentially life-saving work, which previously required nearly $3 million in CPUs, to be accomplished for $60,000 on a single NVIDIA system. Regional weather prediction models, often called convection allowing models, or KAMs, are useful to meteorologists for tracking the evolution and structure of storms. KAMs also help researchers understand the implications of weather-related physical hazards at the infrastructure level. Climate model simulations like Stormcast can inform KAMs, helping them translate slow changes in the moisture content of large atmospheric rivers into flash flood projections in vulnerable coastal areas. Lower resolution machine learning models have emerged as helpful weather prediction models to improve early warning systems for severe events. These machine learning models typically have a spatial resolution of about 30 kilometers and a temporal resolution of 6 hours. Stormcast enables this capability at a 3-kilometer hourly scale. When applied with precipitation radars, weather forecasts with up to 6-hour lead times are 10% more accurate than the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's highest resolution. Next, Arvinda Anantharaman in Bengaluru reports on this week's India Tea News.
India Tea News for the week ending 23rd April 2024. The Assam state government is working on its plans to promote tea tourism in Assam as promised in 2023. Last year, 25 tea estates received funds to promote tea tourism as part of the campaign. And this week, as part of phase two, 34 tea estates have received their sanction letters. This will mean they will stand to see a financial grant of 2 crore Indian rupees, which is about $270,000, to develop tourism and hospitality infrastructure on their estate. Tourism is hoped to bring in more revenue to the managing of tea estates. As for work on estates in the first phase, said to be ongoing, but no further details are currently available. In other news, auctions see higher prices this week. Week 33 saw a sharp rise for all categories in both North and South India. In North India, orthodox tea averaged 316 rupees a kilo, while CTC was at 247 rupees per kilo, higher than sale 32. In the South, CTC dust averaged 137 rupees per kilo, which is higher than CTC leaf, while orthodox leaf averaged 167 rupees per kilo, also higher than the than the previous week. Sale percentages were also higher, and CTC Dust in South India saw 97% sale. And lastly, Sanjay Singhal has been appointed as the CEO of Bagh Bakri Tea Group. He was formerly COO of ITC, where he oversaw the beverage and dairy divisions during his 8-year stint. In October 2023, Parag Desai, executive director of Bagh Bakri, passed away unexpectedly after succumbing to injuries from a fall on his morning walk. Bagh Bakri is the third largest packaged tea company in India and is headquartered in Ahmedabad with a turnover of $250 million.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hello, I'm Bogdan, a passionate tea drinker and the inventor of the ultimate tea machine, the Brewmaker One. Preparation is key to making fine tea. Sequential steepings deliver the best taste possible and unlock the true value of whole leaf teas and botanicals. Brew automates that process without using any pots or capsules. This simple-to-operate smartphone-controlled device stores steeping profiles to consistently make great tea at the push of a button. Brew also reduces time, waste, and energy. That's because I engineered the brew to remember control settings for temperature, brewing time, and quantity. Using my patented process lets you stack steep simply and conveniently.
Tea festivals are enjoying a resurgence, basking in the renewed enthusiasm of health-conscious consumers and the joy of imbibing quality tea. The 14th annual Northwest Tea Festival draws tea enthusiasts to Seattle for two educational and fun-filled days at the Seattle Convention Center on September 28th and 29th. The Northwest Tea Fest has a rich history in tea, evolving from a small local event to become the foremost social gathering for tea lovers in a region known for its beverages. Joining us today are founders Julie Rosenoff and Doug Livingston. Julie Rosenoff is a pioneer in specialty tea dating to 1990 when she co-founded the Perennial Tea Room near Pike's Market on the Seattle waterfront. In 2004, Julie hosted tea-themed dinners there with author Norwood Pratt, narrating the story of teas as courses were served. Tastings and special events led to the founding of the Puget Sound Tea Education Association and the region's first tea party, featuring Barnes & Watson, Tea House Kuan Yin, Tea Geek, that's Michael Coffey, Sa Tea, Village Yarn and Tea, and Choice Organic Tea. Inspired by the mass tastings hosted by Bay Area tea firms for the 50,000 foodies attending the first Slow Food Nation in September 2008, the Northwest Tea Festival, a not-for-profit venture, launched to wide acclaim later that month. Welcome to the TBS podcast, Doug and Julie. The Northwest Tea Festival is a genuine specialty tea experience, a social gathering of respected speakers and vendors with a delightfully appreciative audience. Julie, tell us what inspired you to get involved in hosting this event.
What inspired me to start the festival was Norwood Pratt. He came to Seattle and he came to a meeting of a number of tea vendors in Seattle at that time. And he said that no one was celebrating the 400th anniversary of tea coming to Amsterdam, which is the origin of Orange Pekoe. It was the House of Orange and it was a Pekoe tea. So we said, we'll do this. And we spent a year sorting it out. And the following year, we had our first tea festival. And we've had them every year since then, except for COVID. And we were down for 3 years and now we're back. But that's how it started. I didn't know what was going to happen the first year we did it. And the most exciting thing for me was having 500 people standing in line waiting to get in that first day. And all of them having a wonderful time. I think we only had about seven booths. It was a wonderful thing. Everybody had a good time. And they all said, we want to come back, do it again. And so we have. And so that's, and that is still there. The morning of the first day, there is a line out the door, down the street and around the block. And it is just fabulous to see all these people waiting to have tea.
Doug, how has organizing the festival changed your view of tea?
My view expanded quite a bit by thinking about how to present tea to somebody else and not just focus on myself. And the idea of really delving into speakers, bringing in speakers and people to talk about the culture behind tea and all the various social aspects of tea nationwide, and how I really became more engrossed with tea by working on the festival. So I kind of did my homework and learned a lot more and were able to have contact with some pretty amazing people, not only locally, but nationally and internationally, either in person or via, some sort of media. So yeah, it did change and grew my understanding and appreciation and love of tea. You know, it's hard to measure, but it had a huge impact.
It's a wonderful story about the show's origin. I've attended several and found new events and activities as it matured. Will you give listeners a glimpse of what will happen this year? What makes this year's show special?
What makes this year special is that we're still coming out of COVID. We're still reorganizing and getting ourselves together. And Doug and I, after 17 years, are stepping back a bit. And so new people are in charge, and they're doing a really incredible job. They're working very hard. And some things will be different. Some things will be the same. And it's going to be very exciting watching them come to success with all this new experience and responsibility that they haven't had before. It's going to be great to see.
Will you tell us, Doug, a little more about the venue and the show's layout?
Over the years, we've moved around a number of places, depending on spot sizes and so forth. It's always been centered in the downtown area of Seattle and Seattle Center complex. The current venue is an exhibition hall. Our attendance right now is somewhere around plus or minus 3,000, 3,500 people. We have up to 50, 60 vendors, a lot of presentations and so forth. So it's a large exhibition hall. There's an exhibition floor area, and then we have areas partitioned off around the perimeter for other events, whether it's stage presentations or workshops. And the tea bar is a concept that has been developed not by Julie and I. This was something that was brought in by other people on our planning committee, and they've really developed it and turned it into a very exciting way of allowing people to have and experience tea rather than just walking around between vendors and getting tastes, which is important. But this was a little bit more interaction that's kind of in between the formal presentations and workshops. And it's very accessible to people, and it's been very well received.
I want to focus momentarily on an emerging trend: retailing tea by offering memorable experiences. Everyone in America knows what tea is, but millions have not experienced or enjoyed the exquisite taste of specialty tea. Julie, will you describe how the festival makes it easy for a commodity tea drinker to be awakened to tea's culture, style, and taste?
First off, people come in and see maybe 40 or 50 vendors, all of whom have their own version of exquisite tea. And everybody who comes in receives a sample teacup. It'll hold about 2 ounces of tea. And as they walk around, they can taste all of the teas that all of the vendors are brewing all day long for 2 days. and they can talk about what the teas are. They can ask questions. All of the vendors are going to have plenty of information, and they're going to have samples. If there's something someone really likes, they can take some home. And if they don't like it, they can throw it out and start again somewhere else. But because that happened, you know, your taste has to grow and develop, and you might not welcome a pu'er if you've been drinking Lipton tea bags. So that's a big difference. And but you can, there is a wide open range of what people can try and taste. And that's just with the vendors. And then if they go to the tea bar, they can sit and try different kinds of teas and have them three or four different times, you know, that they'll re-steep, because re-steeping is a concept that only comes with a particular, with exquisite kinds of teas. And if people aren't used to that, then that's a whole new experience for them. And so there's a wide range of varieties and experiences that people can have, and that will just awaken their taste buds and their sensitivity to tea and its wonderful range of experience and flavors.
Doug, what's going through their mind when someone's face lights up after tasting these teas?
Well, a lot of different things, as to, you know, giving somebody an experience that is new and different to them. And that is one of the core things of the tea festival, our tea festival, which is, you know, isn't a commercial event. It's not really a trade show where vendors are selling to other businesses, where our focus is with the person who's actually going to be drinking the tea. And when they light up and realize that there's an aspect to it that they didn't realize before, that's growth for them. That's personal growth. That's enjoyment. That's delight. That's education. And all of those are really core goals of the event. And when we see that happen, we know we're doing what we're trying to do. There's nothing wrong with drinking commodity teas. There's nothing sacred about having to find the most exquisite oolongs and so forth. The idea is the experience and the social aspects of it. And that was also one of the biggest challenges with COVID, was the social aspects and being able to see that response from people and experience that and be able to exchange that back and forth was so truncated, because socially we couldn't be social as much. And, you know, with all the media that came and became available, well, that sort of helped a lot, and certainly is expanded the capacity to be able to do that from a great distance. So yes, we can do a Zoom thing or a Facebook thing and or FaceTime thing and see that experience and that person, you know, smile and make noises, enjoyment, and so forth. we can vicariously experience that as somebody who is trying to reach somebody. And that's, again, the core of tea. Tea is a social beverage at a very basic level. There are many societies, ours is not one, where you don't have meetings without tea. I mean, it's not, it's like being dressed. And it becomes an important part of the experience. So yes, that long answer to that experience is what is all about. It's a celebration of this amazing beverage that has captivated the whole world. We as organizers try to work to maintain a setting and a structure and so forth, so everybody involved in this can have a enjoyable time. We're looking at the experience of everybody around this whole subject of tea and how people can share that experience, whether they're a presenter or whether they're a consumer, whether they're somebody who's trying to find a business.
Julie, I want you to picture yourself as a carnival barker inviting passersby to purchase a ticket.
Come to the tea festival. And find out more about a drink that you probably already like, and meet people who share your enthusiasm and who are going to be willing to show you new ways to drink tea and to enjoy it. And there'll be more people to meet and new friends and a way of expanding a cultural experience throughout the world. You're going to meet people from all over the world. It's going to be very exciting. Don't miss it.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of tea biz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the Tea Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.